the welcoming was so soft that it creates the capacity for you to give it a try. This willingness to try something new comes, even with our own trepidations, from the kindness in which the welcoming or the coming together actually happens, which is a lot of what we're going to talk about just this morning. But before I start, I really am grateful that I have this relationship with Victoria. I'm so glad that Brock and June, you know, thought about me, and that Brock and I are so connected because of the CDL, but just meeting June and his daughter, all of this, I look at your faces like last night and I can still remember you from, you know, the last time I was here. So I'm really glad that I got to be the one to do this debut kind of retreat format. And I hope it goes very smoothly so that you'll really consider doing this a lot more. Just a word about home retreats. I'm not sure how many of you have gone on a residential retreat, but a home retreat is very different. And a home retreat, an online retreat, is different than even a non-residential retreat where we used to meet at that place and we would be secluded away from the world for the period of our weekend or the day. And then we'd go back into our world for a little small bit of time. But you're really basically gonna be in your world the entire day. And at the same time, practice in this retreat kind of format. So I just want to share a little bit about why I think this sort of situation we find ourselves in is the best thing that has ever happened to Dhamma and lay practitioners in the West. It is truly remarkable what can happen if we do this together. So I was scheduled to go to the month-long at Spirit Rock down in California, the March month-long. And I can only do a month-long every once in a while. So I had built up time, family, structure, students, everything is shutting down. I'm doing nothing. I'm going into deep retreat mode. I was so excited. I could barely sleep the night before I left. I get there. I'm settling in. It's feeling great. I'm so happy. And then 2 weeks in, the teachers say, I don't think we can stay. It's getting a little crazy out there. And I think we're going to close early. And I remember they kind of told us, but they gave us this option to stay if we wanted to stay, because the teachers were like, we're staying all the way to the end. And if you want to stay, you can stay. Of course, me, like everybody else, I think maybe out of 100 people, maybe 10 people went home and 90 people decided they were staying. We're not going out in that mess until we have to. But then it became clear that there might be bans on air traffic and air travel, and you won't be able to go. Some people were foreign and they may not be able to get home, and it just did not make any sense to stay. And I remember the level of disappointment I experienced when they said, nope, we're going home in 2 days. Everybody's going to have to start packing up. We're going to close out the retreat tomorrow, and then that's pretty much it. I thought in that moment that my opportunity to have this deep, extended practice was over. And a group of us made a plan to practice. We were going to continue our retreat. And I didn't really believe it was going to be worth it. I didn't really believe this is something I wanted to do. But I agreed to participate with 9 other people. So it was 10 of us. We were going to sit. We decided we were going to sit 3 times a day. That's it. Just get together, sit 3 times a day. And for the rest of the 2 weeks left of the retreat. And by the time I got on the airplane, my retreat was pretty much over. I mean, it was so abruptly ended by the time I got on the airplane flying back home. It was over. I get home, everything has changed, but the very next morning, 7 a.m., I got up and I did my sits. And over the course of that 2 weeks, I learned something. So it's not, all of us may have varying degrees of home practice where we sit half hour, 45 minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. You know, it's a regular, it's a routine. It's like making coffee. It's like, you know, watching TV at the end of the evening. It's this thing that we do. And in a way, it might seem to you that that's sort of what we're going to do here. It's just going to be longer all day. But it's not. There's something about all of us being together, practicing together, that changes the nature of your space. And when I realized it was when my granddaughter had a tantrum meltdown, full on, kicking, screaming, and it happened about, I think it was about 15 minutes or 10 minutes before my sit was supposed to happen in the afternoon. And I remember this energy like, oh, she's got to stop because I can't have my sit and have her screaming at the same time. But her dad was dealing with it. And when my sit time started, she was still in it. I kind of sent a chat to everybody that I couldn't unmute myself because I'm having a tantrum over here. And I just sat, and I was amazed that together with the little team we had created, I could sit, and my granddaughter could have her tantrum, and her dad could work it out in whatever way he felt like working it out. All of that could happen at the exact same time. And it didn't have anything to do with my sitting. It's as if I didn't know that my everyday life wouldn't affect my sitting until I was in a situation where I had to practice in this way. That's what I want to help us begin to see right before the walk-in. I'll explain more about how to hold this. But right now, if it's possible for you to consider your house, your residence, your space is a retreat center. And as long as we are interconnected, all these little squares that we're looking at are all these little retreat centers, all interconnected together. The things that you're going to do during the day when we're not necessarily sitting together during walking, that's yogi jobs. That's all it is. It's your, when you go on a retreat, everybody gets assigned a job that kind of helps clean and tidy up the place so we don't have to pay a lot of money for fees, and the center gets to maintain the health department codes. And so you in your house will be doing yogi jobs. You'll be chopping vegetables. You're going to be both the housekeeping and the kitchen on the yogi jobs. You'll be chopping your vegetables and making your lunch, and you're going to be cleaning up and vacuuming and doing all the other things. You may even have to go to the store. And I learned to put the word meditation after everything I did. So when you go to the store doing some errand, you're going to the store meditation. You're doing your errand meditation. And when you put the word meditation behind it, it means that you're going to hold this experience as a present moment experience. It's not going to be the taking a break from your retreat. It is included in the retreat. So in everything that we do, when we go to a retreat, we think everything we do is part of the retreat. So while we are here together all day, this whole day is a retreat. It does not matter what you do. You are still in retreat. You are not in and out. You're not in retreat when we're on Zoom and at a retreat when I'm doing my walking. Nope. We are in retreat for the whole time. So my suggestion would be to leave your Zoom room, open the whole day. And if you put it on mute or put your, turn off your video, turn off mute, you can go about, do what you need to do, but we will be together either way. We'll be together the whole day, the same way we would be together if we were in a separate space. We'll all be secluded in our container. But this gallery view helps us be secluded together. So that's how I'd like to frame the day, so that we're connected in that way. Can I just see a kind of raise your hand? I'll just flip through here. How many people were not here last night? So I can get a sense of how much. All right, that's not too bad. So I'm assuming those of you that have your video off, you were here. But if you weren't here, you'd put your video on and raise your hand so I could see. So that's good. That's not too bad. All right. So just for the person or two that were not here last night, what we are going to talk about today are what I found to be three sets of emotions. They are emotional, but they are interconnected to awakening. And we're going to contrast that with ordinary. You could call it ordinary emotions or regular emotions, what we know to be emotions. And the three sets that we're going to talk about, we're going to start with metta, which is the Brahma Viharas, and the basic four Brahma Viharas. And then in the afternoon, we're going to talk about two other sets. One would be Samvega and Pasada, and I'll explain it more in the afternoon, and Hiri and Otapa. But we're going to start this morning with metta, because being able to, one of the things I talked about last night, and just as a refresher, you know, our minds are not necessarily able or willing to take in new information that it hasn't already evaluated, it hasn't already determined is correct to me and I like it or I agree. It's not so quick to just take in new information. So some of what we're gonna talk about in the afternoon is gonna be a little new. It was new for me. And so we're going to start this morning with metta to help us create a space where we are willing to even consider the possibility of something outside of our traditional or our typical way of looking at life. And that comes from kindness. It's sort of like Susan's way of letting people in and calling you out in this gentle voice to say hi. Now you get on a Zoom call and it, you know, there's like 50 people on here. So all of a sudden you get on the Zoom call, you come in the room. We usually like to tuck in the back. Nobody says anything to anyone. And here Susan says, oh, David, please introduce yourself and say hi. And I can say hi. And there's a way in which even if you are an introvert and do not like to even be seen, that that kind of a welcoming expresses an ability to just say, hello, good morning, good to see you. And then she's like, oh, good morning. And you can mute yourself. The welcoming itself is what creates the capacity for you to do something that you may not normally do. This is what meta is for me. I know that we have meta phrases and we do a traditional meta practice. And I'm not saying that that we don't do. I want to talk about meta as meta, the capacity itself, and what that quality is as a capacity. It's innate within us. It's not something that we have to we have to somehow find a way to get it, because I don't have it. We all have it. We have it in abundance. We don't always allow it to come forward because we live in a world that has convinced us that we have to be vigilant and protective, and that that meta stuff is way too mushy and smooth, way too wimpy, weak. And so we have a sense that we don't want to do that meta. But I want to take something from last night and just remind you, because this is remind you the difference between these two worlds, these two types of emotions. And then we'll talk about what meta can do for us. So I shared last night that I have a habit of practicing with something I want to talk about. I want to spend a year understanding emotions. I didn't know I was picking the year of emotional roller coaster, but it turns out that I picked the perfect year to practice with this last year, because I spent so much time practicing with trying to understand emotions that we have generally, the ones that are part and parcel of any other data that comes into our lives. And these emotions are like sound. They're like sensations. They come and go. It may not seem like they come and go because the mind can grab a hold of it and make it a permanent thing. But basically, as soon as we let go of the mental story, that emotion will go away. Disappointment, sadness, worry. Well, not worry, because that's in a different category, but disappointment, sadness, inspiration, irritation, frustration, all these words, you know, excitement, they all just come and go, come and go, come and go. The same way sounds come and go. But we tend to hold on to them because we hold on to the story or the experience or the situation that these emotions arose out of. So there's a distinction that we have to begin to cultivate between awakening emotions and our regular emotions. The awakening emotions are not conditioned by outside situations. Awakening emotions, like metta, doesn't matter what the outside condition is. That's why even if you are an introvert, you could unmute yourself, say hi, and mute yourself. Because the kindness by which the opportunity came is what gives you the capacity to do that. It's not that everybody on this call is an extrovert or everyone on this call has the ability or even the desire to just unmute themselves. So it doesn't matter what the outer conditions are when we're talking about these awakening conditions. But for regular emotions, it is purely based on the outer situation. So the experience you're having is what is giving rise to your emotional energy. And you won't be able to see outside of that. We end up spinning in the story itself. So when these awakening emotions are present, we have the potential of having this great insight, because we're not caught by the outer conditions. We can then be in whatever situation that we want to be in. We can be open to anything and everything, because the awakening emotion is basically the base that helps us do that. When we are not, when we're talking about regular emotions, like being afraid or embarrassed or any of this, you know, a very happy or, you know, just even a sense of pride, all of this, you know, feeling this joy on the inside, these regular emotions, we get trapped in the story itself. So the experience becomes the thing that we begin to spin in. And we begin to think about that experience in its mental capacity over and over and over and over and over. It's part and parcel of why we suffer so much in it. So because we get so trapped in it, we try to either make the situation or outer world stay like that because we like that emotion, or we try to prevent that outer situation from ever happening because we don't like it. These awakening emotions that we're going to talk about, they come from an inner core. They come from a humanistic value, a value system. I don't know if you guys know about nonviolent communication from Marshall Rosenberg, but he created this understanding, or he kind of coined it, I guess you could say. He wrote it up, that we all as human beings, no matter what your culture is, no matter where your economic standing is, no matter where you come from, what country, what ethnicity, what religion, it doesn't matter. We have these universal basic needs or values that all human beings move through the world in relationship with. And so part and parcel of these awakening emotions, they rise out of those values. They rise out of a connection with our inner core. Whereas the regular emotions, they arise out of our perception or belief about what's happening. It's a mental application to a present moment. And that mental application is what causes us to get trapped in it. Two more. The awakening emotions are associated with our internal strength. So because they come out of our values and they are associated with our internal strength, that is primarily why these awakening emotions cultivate insight, create the possibility for insight, because they are not tied to beliefs, habits, and perceptions, and regular emotions are associated with a sense of being vulnerable or being weak. So we tend to not trust them because they come up, they're fleeting. They don't have the substance to them. They're superficial in that way because they're fleeting and they won't stay unless the story stays. And so they have a tendency to pull us out off our center when a strong emotion comes up, whether it's a positive one or even what we would consider a negative. When it comes, and it usually comes on the heels of a level of vulnerability. So we try to dampen it down so I'm not so emotional. And finally, these awakening emotions are unworldly. They do not come from you or me. They are more connected to a divine providence, a grace, this kind of universal relationship. That's why metta as a kindness can be extended to anything. It's not limited to certain people. It's like the sun in that way. It shines on anything. The sun does not care what it shines on. The rain does not care what it drops on. Trees don't care who's leaning up against it. It's just a universal way in which life exists as it exists. And this is more in alignment with the way these awakening emotions are. Whereas the regular emotions are tied to these eight worldly concerns, the sense of gain and loss or pain or pleasure, blame or praise or fame and ill repute. This is the distinction that the qualities of these awakening emotions are different than regular emotions. So you might ask, well, how do you know they're emotions if they're kind of different like that? And it's because they have the felt sense quality of what an emotion is. It's the container that holds the moment. It's the expression or the aliveness of this moment is held in the quality of our emotions. And that's why I think they are referred to as emotions, even in Dhamma. So that's a lot here, this distinction. But this distinction is important. It's important to begin to see that if we allow our regular emotions to just flow through us, we have an ability to be with them. But the emotions that we want to cultivate and strengthen, those are the ones that are moved, that can arise in order to give us the capacity to awaken. And that's what I want to support us in cultivating and beginning to consider over the course of the day. So we're going to practice with these emotions and we're going to consider them a little bit. But by and large, this is probably going to be the day that you're going to contemplate what this is and what it means. I'm dropping my stuff here. This is going to be the day that you're going to contemplate. You're going to consider. And then in the afternoon, right before we close, we'll talk about some ways that you could begin to practice with them more directly and allow them to grow in your life. And then you'll begin to see how these emotions actually do become the ground in which we stand on. So before we go into our first meditation, I just want to talk a little bit about metta. This metta as capacity. There are four mettas, really. It's not one metta, one compassion, one sympathetic joy, one equanimity. It's four mettas. But the metta that you are experiencing is different depending on the experience you're having. It's different. It has a different feel to it, but it's still metta. So when metta as an experience that we're going to talk about, as a felt sense, comes in contact with suffering, it transforms, it restructures itself into compassion. It has the quality of compassion because of the suffering. When the suffering is moved, it then becomes back into what we consider metta. Metta would be this basic goodness, this basic kindness, basic friendliness. It's a softening, a way to begin to think about it is that if you love pets, if you love dogs, or you love cats, all you have to do is see the picture of a cat. And it doesn't really matter what's going on. That natural softening will occur. If you love dogs, you're having a bad day, then you look out the window and you see the neighbor's dog chasing its tail or something, and it softens right there. Because the bad day has nothing to do with metta. Metta is that aspect of the capacity to soften. And oftentimes we don't experience that ability to soften, to be kind, to be tender, to be gentle, friendly, except we don't experience it as a natural aspect unless we're connecting to something we have a natural inclination towards. So a natural inclination towards softening helps us begin to see, oh, the metta doesn't have anything to do with whether I'm in a good mood or not. The metta has to do with, am I oriented towards softening, kindness, tenderness? And I have found that people have to find their own words. So in this morning, we're going to consider, what is your word? What is the word that most feels right for you? You may not like the word loving kindness. So every time someone says metta, you think loving kindness, you think, I can't do that. It just doesn't feel right to be loving kindness. I can't do that. But if someone were to say friendliness, then you might say, yes, I know how to feel friendly. I like that quality of feeling friendly. And for me, I learned that the word that most connected to me was kindness. I have a sense of what kindness is, and I have a sense of when I'm being kind and when I'm not. I can feel when I'm being kind and when I'm not. It's an inner quality that I know. I don't really have a feel that says I'm being loving kindness or I'm not being loving kindness. And even the friendliness, I started with friendliness, but even that began to feel a little superficial to me. So I'm like, okay, I feel friendly, but you know, not really, but okay, I feel friendly. This is what you have to begin to sense into this contemplation this morning. What is the word that helps you touch into this innate ability to be soft? It might be a word like soften. Can I soften with this moment? Some words might be accept. Accept is a kind of catch 22 here. It's got a rough edge because accept is sort of like friendliness. You're like, okay, I'm gonna accept it. You know, I'm defeated. I gotta accept it. That is not metta. So it might be more of receptivity. Do you have a receptivity to can you be receptive to this moment? Can you have a sense of allowing in this moment? or just relaxing into the moment. These are all words that center around this quality of metta that's not about, I gotta do a particular thing, but it's about the quality of heart that you're trying to cultivate. And what that word is yours. So the metta itself, when it comes with suffering, it turns into compassion. But this softening friendliness, when it comes around other people's successes, we can begin to feel their happiness and it can soften into sympathetic joy. Not because I'm glad you got some good thing. I never get anything good, but I'm glad you got something good. At least one of us is happy. It's not that. That is the way I thought of it in the beginning. It's more that you soften around the joy of another and you can begin to feel the same joy that they feel because you're willing to soften instead of being in this tension with them, this receptivity, this loosening of the moment. That softening, loosing, relaxing, kind of friendlier, kinder quality towards the moment does something remarkable. It allows you to feel the same joy that your friend is having. Because just like we share in each other's pain, we share in each other's joy. And we only can do that if we loosen and soften and relax into this quality of metta. And when metta turns towards that aspect of life or people we do not have control over, we can begin to also see that I don't have to control everything. In fact, we can see and tolerate the fact that I don't control everything. And very little in the life that I have do I have control over. All of this I'm talking about in metta is about aversion. It's not just, it's anger, but it's the fake anger that's really rooted in aversion. It's rooted in this tension of, I don't like that. I don't want that. No. It's like my granddaughter, she's 3. No, she can say that. She probably heard it all her life, so now she's got it down pat. No, no, no. That's all she says. I'm like, yes. She's like, no. But rooted in that tension is aversion. It's the mind's constantly pushing against what it doesn't like, what it doesn't know, what it doesn't want. It pushes. It's not you pushing. It's not me pushing. It is the nature of our minds. We get set in this understanding of this is the way life should be, and it should always be that way. But it can't always be that way because we live in a world based fundamentally in impermanence. So everything is going to change and rearrange, and we are forever going to be stuck in this tension that's driving us crazy. So we have this no, 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 I don't want it. I don't like it. That tension is what metta is aimed at softening. Not that you have to accept what you don't want or, you know, put up with the I don't like. You soften the tension around the moment. And as we soften that tension, our ability to respond is very different. This is what we're looking at. Where's the tension? And then can I soften around the tension? And then my response is going to be based more out of wisdom and insight and not just this automatic, no, no, I don't like it, no. Within this aversion that we live in all the time, we have it all day long. All of us, everybody. We have learned as a society to mask it, but it's always there. I don't like it. I don't want it. Tension, 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 tension. Shows up in judgment, shows up in criticism, shows up in our irritations and this kind of sarcasm. It's all there. And this is not about me or you. This is about softening the tension. What I found was, if I just try to not be angry, which is what I thought this was all about, okay, I'm trying to do the practice. Everybody I know seems like they're not angry, so I need to chill out on all this anger. I'm trying to soften it, soften it, soften it. And I learned that you need anger. I mean, anger is one of the most powerful energies in the world, and it could move you to change your entire life. So why would I want to get rid of one of the most important energies in order for me to make a change? If I'm spinning in a kind of a dysfunctional situation and I need to make a change, I need some anger about this. I've had enough. And then I can move and do something different. So what I realize, it's not the anger. It's the tension. It's the aversion that what Buddha called, or at least it's translated in English, hatred. We don't like that word hatred because it seems like it's, oh, I'm not that kind of person. I don't hate anything. But there is a hatred when you put something up and say no before you've even dealt with it. There's a judgment, kind of a controlling it. So this metta that we're going to work on this morning, work with, is beginning to see where we have this automatic push. We're not going to try to fix everything this morning. We're just going to see if we can give ourselves a little time to see how much of a I don't like is going on.